This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR.
Listening to live and on-demand shows has never been easier on MPR. All you have to do is go to the App Store or Play Store on your device and search up Access Internet Radio NZ. Select and download the first option at the top of the list. Once you've downloaded the app, the next step is to open the app and look for MPR. Once found, select it and then browse freely. Supported by New Zealand On Air.
Are you a midlifer and feel it is finally your turn? Spent your years up until now taking care of everybody else's needs. Feel invisible when you have so much more to offer society. Then welcome to the Middlelicious Podcast, the podcast where we talk about how to live a delicious and magnificent midlife. With your host, Nikki G, coach, author, speaker, and Middlelicious midlifer. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Middlelicious Podcast. I'm Nikki G, your host, and it's fantastic to have back Eleanor Butterworth. Nearly said Butterfield, Eleanor. Eleanor Butterworth, welcome.
Thank you.
We got into an amazing discussion. You have such wisdom, and it's so amazing to talk to you because relationships are something I think when we hit midlife, I think there are several things that happen, and I know I sent you some questions, so yeah. I warned you we probably only get to the questions in the second one because of the topic. But, you know, I think what happens sometimes with midlifers is it's interesting because the divorce rate, midlifers are the highest demographic for divorces now.
Right.
In Australia, New Zealand and the States, I don't know about England, but when I look at the stats, so there's something happening with midlife, and I think – I mean, I'm a midlifer, and I think there are probably several things at play. I remember, I don't know, did you ever read Gail Sheehy Passages?
No.
She was interesting because she wrote that before. I always think that my generation was probably the last generation of women who dedicated a large part of their lives to raising children. You know, we didn't tend to have as many working mums. Now it's wonderful. Yeah. Women have so much. And we had the opportunity, but it wasn't quite as common then.
Yeah.
So and she talks about that when midlife hits, that the man who's worked hard to create his career is kind of ready to slow down now. And the woman is going, this is my time now. So kids are left, I'm on my way. And so therefore it causes a separation, which I'm not surprised. But also, I think there's a lot of invisibility in relationships. So we're going to touch on a few of those things. So the first thing, what do you think the keys are? Because you do a fantastic healthy relationship, or a couple of fantastic healthy relationship workshops.
Oh, thank you.
What are the keys to long-term relationships? How do you help a relationship survive? Well, not just survive, because I don't want to be in a relationship that survives. I want to be in a relationship that thrives. So what are the keys?
Well, with the caveat, my first relationship was 15 years, but from when I was 15 to about 30, and my current relationship is about 5 years. So, you know, with the, if you will, bear with me giving opinions based on...
We'll get you back in another 10 years.
Yeah.
But 15 to 30, I mean, that's massive change in those years of your life.
Really, yeah, really huge, really huge. And, I mean, one of the things that I think I've learned, you know, I've worked very closely with people around relationships. I'm one of those people that has a lot of in-depth conversations. I always say I'm the keeper of the secrets, you know. So one of the things that I think really keeps a relationship strong over time is playfulness.
Yes.
You know, we talk a lot about trust and communication and that sort of thing, and I think that's all really true. But I've particularly worked in... not so much, I'm not talking here about abusive relationships, but couples who are trying to stay strong and find that spark and that sort of thing. And I think the power of playing together and having fun together and energizing, you know, I think that's a thing just for positive aging anyway. But I think, I don't know if you read or listen to a lot of Esther Perel, but she...
Love her.
Yeah, so do I.
I think there's not a woman who doesn't listen to her and goes, right, I'm sicking her onto my husband.
Yeah. You know, and she says this thing that, you know, foreplay starts at the end of the last orgasm, you know, and like that thread of play and connection. And, you know, and I think about that in In my relationship, you know, I think early on we'd get into these big, heavy conversations, and then we'd find ourselves sitting in these rooms which were getting dark, having these miserable conversations. And one of the things that we started doing was, and one of the things I've really learnt is, talking is good, and there are times when you need to talk, but there's a lot that can be resolved just by keeping that thread of fun. And, you know, we have a joke in our relationship that we take everything outside, you know, as there's something particularly after my father died and my partner had lost her best friend at the same time, and it was too much to sit in the house and try and have these conversations, but having them walking along a beach, you know, in the mass of nature actually helped you put those things into perspective. And likewise, you know, I've really learned for us that going out for dinner is often not that fun for us, but going for a bike ride or going pine cone collecting or walking the dog together or playing cards together, that's the stuff that, you know, holds that, that charge, I think. So
I think you're absolutely right. You know, I was thinking about this when I was thinking I was going to have you on the podcast, is one of the things my husband and I do is we laugh a lot.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of laughter.
Yeah.
And I think that if I wouldn't want someone who didn't know how to laugh. I find that really challenging. But you're right. I think another thing that I've heard or read is kindness.
Yeah.
Long-term relationships are healthy and last when there is kindness in the relationship. And that's quite a rare thing in this day of self-indulgence and what's the word I want? You know, we seem to have an emphasis on self these days, which is so it's but playfulness, I really love that. And you're right, there was a time and place for those heavy conversations. And I think you need those also to survive.
Absolutely.
Because I think things that aren't discussed often become those resentful, festering wounds that then burst out and you know, but playfulness is so important. Anything else?
What else have I learnt? I think, you know, you were saying, you wouldn't like to be with someone who couldn't laugh, but one of the things that I've noticed is that it's easy to get so busy that you forget to laugh or take that time for each other. And I think one of the things that I've really learnt as I've got older is that no matter how worthy the job I've been doing is and no matter how much satisfaction it gives me, once I've moved on from it, I never hold the memories of that job in the same way I hold the memories I do in my family or my friends or those sorts of things. So I think always making that the priority and checking that regularly. You know, you might have a year when you're really busy or focused on work, but I do always try and make within that the time to actually connect and to really connect. I'm not someone that if I haven't seen my partner, you know, it's easy for us to be ships passing in the night because I travel a lot and they work shift work on a 24-hour, 4-on-2-off roster. So it's easy to do that. But I can just forget what it is I need to say. It's not even that I'm hiding anything. It's that I haven't had the opportunity and they haven't had the opportunity. So we fall out of practice and then the other things start falling off, like the fun and the trust and the, you know, knowing each other's hopes and dreams. That would be another big one. This is one that a friend of mine taught me. She described having a hard time with her partner and then, you know, saying to him, I feel like you don't even know what my hopes and dreams are anymore. And I think that's a really important thing all the way through our lives, to know what each other's hopes and dreams are and to never forget there's more to learn about another person because they're constantly changing.
That I love that idea. I always say, always let your partner surprise you.
Yeah.
You know, I think we can decide. I know I've sometimes said to my husband, don't tell me what I think.
Yeah.
No, don't tell me what I'm thinking. You don't know what I'm thinking. Sometimes he does, damn it, and that really annoys me. You know, and I'm almost tempted to say, it's really important to have that element of surprise, isn't it? I mean, when was the last time anyone in a long-term relationship said to their partner, wow, I didn't know that about you? Or, but two, I think that's coupled a bit with change, isn't it? That we like the familiar. We like the – we have this false belief that there is security in the familiar, and there's just not. Because it's – so the minute someone changes, we become hypervigilant and you know, so it's quite fascinating, isn't it?
And it's tempting to get to a point in your life where you think, I know my values, therefore I know what I think about everything. Like, I've really enjoyed getting older, and my values on all sorts of things, you know, we're talking about Esther Perel, like ideas of monogamy and those sorts of things, having been really open to being like, oh, you know, I did believe this really strongly 5 years ago. Now I see it from a whole different point of view. And I think there's that willingness to grow as individuals, but also not putting pressure on our partners to stay as they, as we always knew them best.
Absolutely. So, I think we can box people, can't we? I also think that we can remember someone at a particular time, whether it was a good time or a bad time, and that's who, that we've decided who they are from that. And so we keep finding, I always say the challenge with beliefs, you know, when I'm in a coaching session and talking about beliefs, I say the problem with beliefs, one, we don't tend to know what they are, but two, we will try and find evidence to prove ourselves right. So therefore, we only see what proves ourselves right. There's a lovely saying, bless you. I've just got my little six-year-old granddaughter sitting there. She's been so good, but she's just sneezed. Bless you, Gaia.
Blown your cover.
As she's blown her cover, yes, because she's been sitting there so well. There's a lovely saying I posted on Instagram today, a Confucius saying that I heard in the weekend, that we have two lives. The second one begins when we realize that we only have one.
Yes.
And I think that's such a lovely saying. And it's, so what about those long-term relationships? You know, we were talking in the break about how the divorce rate for midlife, it's the highest divorce rate out of any demographic.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of women and men in their 50s who, and I don't think the stereotypical man leaving for younger woman actually happens as much as we think it does. It does happen, but it actually does. Poor old men get a hard time about it, but I don't think it happens.
Yeah.
Relationships can just stagnate. So what do you do with a relationship that you really want to keep and you value, but you feel it's stagnating? It feels empty. I often say to people, I think it's lonelier in a relationship you're lonely in, that it is lonelier than being alone. Because it's a different type of desperation, I think.
Absolutely. And, I mean, there's a million – I'm such a person in the grey, so I'm always want to – this is probably why we're managing to fill the whole podcast really quickly.
Because you'll never get a straight answer.
No. You know, there's so many different configurations of relationships, but this is how I handle things in my own – is the first thing that I do is invest in myself. Often I'll find if my relationship's stagnating is because there's something in me that is, and again, we're not talking about abusive or controlling relationships here, but often it can be a sense of I'm not fulfilling, my life doesn't feel fulfilling, so I'm looking at my relationship to be like, why are you not fulfilling me? So that's where I always start. I really like Elaine de Botton's work on relationships.
I've read his stuff on success, but not so much on relationships.
He wrote a article for the New York Times, which in 2016 was the most read article on the internet, apparently. So the year of Brexit and Trump, he wrote an article called Why You All Marry the Wrong Person. And he talks about the fact that as we go through life with another person, life can be really hard, and sometimes we mix up the other person being the problem rather than they're just there bearing witness to the struggle that is life. So one of the first places I always start, and this is not to sound victim blaming or that sort of thing for anyone whose partner does not give them the emotional support they need, but that's the first place I start is, what is it in my life that I feel like I'm missing? And often through that, I feel like I've disconnected from other relationships, which are really important to me. So I've started to look to this one relationship to fill all those needs. So that's the first place that I would start. The next, you know, thing that I would do there would be, and this is going to depend on who your partner is. Are they someone who's ever, you know, has that relationship ever thrived?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because sometimes it's, well, the relationship hasn't ever thrived, and now that the kids are left home and we're not so busy, that's become really blatantly obvious. But I think kind of going back to those things that you love and the ways that you held love early on in your relationship, we do an exercise in our Healthy Relationships course for people who are in longer-term relationships where we get them to think about all of the ways they nurtured love early in their relationship. So often early in our relationship, we are very kind to our partners. We really anticipate their needs. We think about, oh, that's the anniversary of my partner's mother's death. I'm going to do something really special, or I know they've got this big trip, you know. And so we do that very deliberately. And as we get busier, as we go on through relationships, we can stop doing those things. So I do think some of those really simple things, like if a couple can take turns doing some of those planning, those surprises for each other, finding the things that brings out the play and the connection, and whatever it is that they shared, as well as if I'm doing that alongside turning up all my other relationships, you know, I think especially for women, often their partner is not the person that meets all their emotional needs. So equally valuing friendship and neighbourship and, you know, the relationship you have with kids and those sorts of things can help us know where we can get those needs met if it's you know, if that just isn't something our partner's ever given us and are unlikely to ever give us.
I think that's such an interesting point, Eleanor, because I do think sometimes we expect our partners to be everything, and it's not what I want to be, and it's not what I should expect someone else to be.
Yeah.
I always cringe when I hear the words, but I just want to make him happy or her happy. I always say to people, it's actually not your job.
No.
If they can't make themselves happy, then that's just, where's that line drawn?
Yeah.
I love what you said, because I realized one day, and my husband doesn't listen to my podcast, thank God, so he possibly never hear this, but I realized that how I felt about the relationship was so dependent upon how I was feeling about life.
Yeah.
And if I was feeling a bit down about life, then everything was black.
Yeah.
But when, and once you realize that, you can be more honest about what's going on in the relationship, but also removes blame.
Yeah, yeah, yep. And that's one of the reasons why I often start with myself, is not to take on all the responsibility of a shared relationship, but I find that when I feel stronger in myself, I'm able to view with a more critical eye.
Absolutely.
Where are the gaps in the relationship, as opposed to, you know, I feel blah.
Yeah.
Please heal all of me.
Absolutely. And you need to change, because I'm not happy. That to me, you know, I've said to clients before, women in particular, I have to say, is don't make your husband your project.
Yeah.
It's not your job to get him and then change him how you wanted. If you didn't like him as he is, then maybe you should be asking yourself different questions. But there's also a sex therapist in America who says we have to stop becoming experts at our partner's faults.
Yeah.
And I think that's so powerful.
Yeah.
That's really powerful.
I think, you know, one of the other things is, I remember when I was in my early 20s and people were doing stag do's and hen do's, and I think these are a little bit nicer than they used to be, but it was this real like, oh, last night of freedom.
I know.
And like, go and do things which were kind of yuck, you know. And one of the things that I felt then but can articulate now is like, if I feel like being with this person is me giving up my freedom, why? I don't, that's not something I'm willing to do.
Absolutely.
So it's also that mindset of, I'm not having adventures until I'm in a long-term relationship. I want to have adventures forever. Some of those will be with my partner. Some of those will be by myself or with other people. But yeah, that keeping of adventuring, and you know, and that all leads into the stuff around being willing to change and willing to see our partner change before us as well. So
I think too, I think sometimes, in fact, I think regularly. I know. Have you ever listened to any of Marianne Williamson's stuff? She wrote incredible book, Return to Love, an amazing book. In fact, that quote that is always attributed to Nelson Mandela about it's not our darkness we fear, that's actually written by Marianne Williamson, and it's in Return to Love.
So that's so interesting.
Yes, she wrote Return to Love. God, it's probably 20 years old now.
I have actually seen that quote attributed to her and thought, isn't that Nelson Mandela?
No, it's not Nelson Mandela. It's actually Marianne Williamson. She's actually standing for the Democrat Party. She wants to run for president. So, yes, that's a whole other topic we won't get onto. But she said, and I really thought about it, she said that what happens is she was talking to women. She said, we have this idea of what the perfect relationship's going to be, and we're going to shove a man into that picture frame. Here's what it looks like. We don't even consider the fact that he might want something a little bit different. And I think if there's something I've learned as I've got older, that compromise is not only okay, but it's actually essential.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got to know what your bottom line is, and that's, I think, being clear. But also, too, don't lose your own identity. You know, it fascinates me how many people won't do things because their partner's not doing it. It's like, I wouldn't do anything if that was the case, because Andre's a complete introvert. And when he gets home, he just wants to stay at home. You know, so I, there are things I will say to him, I really want you there. And there are things we would travel really well together. But I walk kilometres on my own and I'll go and do things. And I'm very lucky that he's not at all threatened by that, because I think there are a relationship with that certain. But you've got to maintain your own identity, don't you? Because that's really important.
Yeah, and find it. If you know, I mean, that's one of the hard things, isn't it? It's the idea that someone can also have been grown up, you know, raised, sort of groomed to be a parent and a wife, and that being the most important role, in that sense of, you know, giving people permission to find themselves at any age. And it's also, you know, I mean, one of the things I love about you doing a podcast like this is getting rid of that idea that we've got an expiry date.
Absolutely.
And I think that's particularly strong for women as well.
Yes.
And, you know, I mean, there's the individuals going into the relationship, there's the relationship, but there's also all the pressure that our society puts on relationships to look a certain way and to act a certain way. And I think we need all three of those pieces. Like, we need to get so much more flexible about how we view relationships.
Absolutely.
And a successful relationship. You know, I always say, you know, I view my first relationship with my kid's dad as one of them, as a massively successful relationship. Like, it, you know, I grew so much. We both had these beautiful children. We remain good friends. But all the, our language, you know, I was in a meeting recently where someone said, you know, talked about kids from broken homes. And it's like, well, my kid's home's not broken.
Mm.
It's success. You know, it was a really successful. And I think if we can bed down that idea that relationships can change, and someone you've been in a relationship with can go on to just be your family as opposed to your partner, it also, you know, it feeds into all the other things we've been talking about change and growth and, and that flexibility and lack of judgment in the way that we do things.
Absolutely. And I think there are a couple of things, too, that I often think about. One is that it always fascinates me how often, you know, and I don't think I've heard it said as often to single men as to single women. Oh, don't worry, you'll find someone soon. Like, that's the only way they're going to be saved.
Yeah.
You will find someone. But also, I think it's so important to learn to be on your own.
Absolutely.
Because the women I have seen step into really healthy second or third relationships are the ones that have learned to be on their own. So they're not looking for a man or a woman to fulfill them.
Yeah.
I just want someone. I've met someone. I just happen to have met someone.
Yeah.
And I think we've got to – relationships are wonderful, but I think being in a miserable relationship, you're better off alone. And so many people hold out because they're terrified of being on their own.
Absolutely. And, you know, I was saying to a friend of mine a year or so ago, and she's in her early 50s, and, you know, she said that she was worried about getting old alone. And I said, well, I look at the older woman I know, and it's mostly not their partners that give them comfort.
Absolutely.
Know? It's actually the people that give them the most comfort are their friends who they're still in touch with from university days, or the, you know, the neighbour that they've lived next door to for, you know, 20 years, or their church community. And I think that's that friendships are not a second place prize, you know, or, you know, they – and that also speaks to not overloading our romantic relationships, eh? That,
yes, you're going to be my all.
Yeah, good luck.
Exactly, good luck with that. I mean, that may last. God, I always remember – and expectations – I won't go into the – because probably haven't got time for the long story, but we had a night as a group of friends and somewhere in New Zealand. I won't, because I'd hate the people to identify, but we heard this young couple, they were just full-on fighting in a restaurant and full-on fighting till everyone sort of moved away. And then we thought, wow, what's going on? And then we went on to a ferry, which took people from one part to the next, and this couple came on again and they were full-on fighting again, like loud.
Yeah.
And my friend and I, bless her, she said to me, do you think they're okay? I said, why don't we go and find out? So we went and sat next to them. and talk to them for probably only 10 minutes. Yeah. And I'd like to think that we somehow changed their night.
Yeah.
But one of the things was, it was her birthday and she'd given him a particular thing for his birthday and she felt let down by what he'd given. Aww. And I thought, wow, expectations. And I said to her, it's lovely what you gave to him, but you can't give it with the expectation that he's going to match it. Because he'd put a lot of thought into what he'd given her, but it was really sad to see this young couple so distressed. You know, she was like that sobbing where you can't actually control. Yeah. And when we left them, they seemed to be, he gave her a cuddle, and I hope they sorted it out. And it was, but it was.
Isn't that a great example, though, of you have individuals in a relationship, you have the relationship, and then you have the messages they get
absolutely
from society and community. And in that case, you and your friends gave them a really different sort of positive message that helped de-escalate that as opposed to being like, well, he should know, and or you shouldn't ask, or you shouldn't expect.
It's interesting because I also thought there was, it's what you said earlier. You said we've got to stop not interfering. We've got to stop believing that that's interfering. This couple was clearly distraught.
Yeah.
And rather than everyone pointing and laughing and getting embarrassed, and I really admire my friend who said to me, I think, and because there were two of us and it was on a very public place, we felt safe to do it.
Yeah.
And he was the nicest young man. They were a gorgeous young couple, but they'd just got something had fueled and then alcohol was involved and it was like, and then of course she felt deeply ashamed because she was the one that was yelling and screaming and swearing and I just said to her, look, people will walk away and forget about this. Here I am talking about it. But, you know, I said, it won't matter.
Oh,
tomorrow it won't matter. You just need to worry about each other and go back where you're going and focus on each other. And don't even talk about it tonight because things are too fraught.
Yeah.
When you've cooled down and things are better, when you're not hungover, then talk about it. But, you know, I'd like to think that we did some good, Eleanor. But
absolutely.
It was that, big question, because we've only got 2 minutes.
Okay.
This is just crazy. Well, women, I think one of the things that happens as we get older is we start to feel invisible, particularly in relationships. And I don't think these things have helped.
Yeah.
What would you say to a woman who's feeling invisible in a relationship?
Ooh.
It's a tough one, eh? Wrap yourself in glad wrap like she did in Fried Green Tomatoes.
I think the first thing that I think is I've never met anyone, you know, any woman, any person who is not endlessly interesting and worthy of our time. And, you know, people think interesting things. They have amazing perspectives. They have incredible experiences and not traveled around Europe, you know, doing up villas experiences, but actually, you know, what I saw working in that supermarket for 20 years, like that's the first thing, is that all kind of life and experience is, you know, really inherently worthy and interesting. So I think that's the first thing. I think also as a society, we have to start making room for that wisdom and not assuming that age means out of date or
irrelevant.
And not reading, women asserting their knowledge as, you know, being interfering or being nags or anything like that. And I think we need more spaces that we can do that. It's interesting. I've just been talking about this with friends whose parents are aging. And, you know, I was saying, isn't it interesting? We have all of these skills, but how do we use them to really support our parents having the very best last part of their lives possible, and the space and the recognition that we are not tolerating our parents, you know, as they age. Like, I still see, you know, for my mum, for example, as having so much, like, wisdom to give, but I can see as she's got older that she doesn't think, she's maybe not, doesn't recognise that we want that as much as we ever did. So I don't think there's a simple answer to it. I think it's a combination of believing in our self-worth and the things that we have to offer, but equally our society to give those opportunities for that wisdom to actually shine through once someone finishes working or those sorts of parts of their lives. Like, how do we actually capture all that these amazing women have to offer? And I think the other thing in terms of relationship, which I've already said, I think it's never too late sometimes for couples to change their patterns. Mm. And I think if they're, and I know this isn't easy, particularly for older people, but I think sometimes the role of counselling in that can be really transformative in terms of people being seen and being able to articulate their needs. And I think when someone feels invisible, often you have someone else in the relationship who also isn't able to articulate their needs, and having some help with that can be really incredible. I know that's not the first place a lot of people go to. But
no, it's not. And the problem is, too, that not all counsellors are equal, and
absolutely,
I think that's the problem. So we have run and we've gone way over time. Oops. So thank you so much, Arnaud. I think we could probably do 17 podcasts, but I will be having you back because your wisdom's been fantastic. So you've been listening to the Middlelicious podcast, so go out there and have a magnificent and delicious midlife.
Support this program and others like it by giving a donation to NPR. More details at npr.nz.